Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, December 12th, 2020. A commentary by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Staff will continue to prove readers' investment and time are worth it. I don't mind telling you that this has been a week I've been dreading for a while. This is the week that the Midland Reporter-Telegram went from a 7-day-a-week newspaper to a 5-day-a-week paper. And the record will show that I was the editor when it happened. So much for legacy building, right? The fact is, the Reporter-Telegram has been through serious changes in the past few years. We have stopped our own presses and shipped that responsibility to Lubbock. That was the day our heartbeat stopped, something I can relate to. We have put our building up for sale. Some say it will show our ability to adapt and that we will be able to grow roots at another place in Midland. I have been in Midland for nearly 26 years. I have worked at the building on 201 East Illinois Avenue for more years than I had previously been alive. Moving from a house will be a walk in the park compared to leaving our downtown home. And now this transition. It is understandable why we were having to travel this road, but it doesn't make it any easier for me. I am like many of the readers I have heard from over the past few days. I have my routines, and many of them revolve around putting out a daily newspaper. It was that way when I came to the Reporter-Telegram on January 9, 1995, to join a newsroom of about 27 staffers. In January, our newsroom will be 10. How's that for efficiency? All of this is to say that I feel your frustrations. Chances are, I feel it more than you will ever know. Still, when the calendar turns to 2021, and yes, for other reasons that will be nice, there still will be people working their tails off for you. Their names include Mella McEwen, an oil editor as trusted as any journalist in our community that I can remember, with the exception of old Ed Todd. There is Tim Fisher, a photo veteran who decided to call Midland home for 20-plus years, even when other opportunities were available. But our readers are better because he said, maybe next time. There are Oscar Leroy and Chris Haydorn, whose prowess on the sports beat make this former sports editor wonder how they do it all. There is Mercedes Cordero, the most exceptional online editor I have worked with. There is J.C. Lewis, an incredibly versatile journalist whose growth has been remarkable and whose pleasant personality and enthusiasm for the job are contagious. There's Caitlin Randall, whose reporting skills rank up there with the best young reporters who have walked the halls of the Reporter-Telegram. Lastly, Tori Aldana and Evan Winston round out the staff. You will never see their names, but without them doing the work of 4 paginators, our paper would never be possible. This group will represent what's still good in journalism, gathering information and being excited about what's possible in Midland in the future. We will celebrate Midland's successes and be sad, frustrated, and disappointed when the news isn't what we all want. We are members of the community as well as Reporter-Telegram employees, after all. Yes, today's newspaper isn't like any Saturday newspaper in the history of the Reporter-Telegram. It is the weekend edition. It will have longer feature stories, the oil report, the guts of a Sunday paper, coupons and inserts, TV schedules for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, puzzle pages for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, comics for all 3 days, and more. Today, you will not be shortchanged. And yes, we get it. If your Saturday routine doesn't involve a deep dive into the Reporter-Telegram, just set it aside. It will be as good on Sunday. Lastly, I want to thank our subscribers and advertisers who have stayed with us and who we can call community partners. It is your demand for the best community newspaper possible that brings us back to do better next time. And while there won't be 7 next times every week, there will be plenty for us to prove that your investment, your time, and your attention to the Reporter-Telegram were worth it. For those with questions about the editorial product, feel free to call me at 432-352-0605. For those with questions about your subscription or other customer service matters, contact 432-688-2700. We are here to take care of our customers' concerns. Yes, it will take time to get used to our new reality of not having papers delivered on Sunday and Monday. I have referred to the Sunday newspaper more times in the past few weeks than I care to admit. However, I also know this to be true. There is never a day when tomorrow's paper is done. We wake up and start over from scratch. It has always been that way, and it will always be that way. And there is a staff ready to prove itself all over again. Healthcare. Wilson. MMH typically has 200 flu cases by this time of year. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstMP.com. Midland Health Chief Medical Officer Larry Wilson said earlier this week that the lack of flu cases is a credit to mitigation efforts taking place in Midland County. He told the Reporter-Telegram in an email that the large number of daily cases of COVID-19 illustrates that virus is far more transmissible than influenza. Wilson again warned that the holiday season will be the test of Midlanders' ability to prevent another COVID spike, much like those that followed Memorial Day, July 4th, and Halloween. The best we can do is slow the spread, not stop it, he said, but not doing all the right things, and it gets quickly out of control. Keep it smoldering, not flaring up. Wilson cited the CDC's recommendation that Americans wear face masks universally. The CDC on its website also states, a mask is not a substitute for social distancing. Masks should be worn in addition to staying at least 6 feet apart. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Or use hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol after touching or removing your mask. The latest COVID-19 surge has increased the total number of confirmed and unconfirmed cases inside Midland County during the pandemic toward 12,000, according to the Midland Health Department. The number of COVID-19-related deaths in Midland County is at 159. As Midland Health Russell Myers said Thursday during his weekly press conference, Midland Memorial Hospital hasn't had its first confirmed case of flu. Mask wearing and social distancing and other mitigations are working as there has been a significant reduction in flu this year. Normal years, we would have had around 200 cases by now, according to the lab. Odessa may become sanctuary city for unborn if incumbents lose. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Ahead of Tuesday's runoff election that will decide the direction of the Odessa City Council, a candidate for mayor and 2 council member candidates have stated they support making Odessa a sanctuary city for the unborn and outlawing abortion within city limits. Mayor candidate Javier Hoven and council candidates Denise Swanner and Mark Matta have said they support making abortion illegal in Odessa, according to Mark Dixon, director of Right of Life of East Texas. Talk of outlawing abortion is not unique to Odessa. 17 cities in Texas have declared themselves sanctuary cities over the last year and a half as part of a movement spearheaded by Dixon. The Big Spring City Council in January became the largest city to pass an ordinance banning abortion. The ordinances are not nearly the same in every city, although some also attempt to outlaw emergency contraception. Big Spring's ordinance does not include a clause related to emergency contraception, and neither does a copy of the ordinance Dixon is hoping will be proposed in Odessa. The possible Odessa ordinance, written by Dixon, who provided a copy to the Reporter-Telegram, is written with 2 sections related to enforcement, one dealing public enforcement and one detailing private enforcement. The public enforcement section would involve a fine, but would not be enforceable unless Roe v. Wade is overturned. However, the private enforcement section states individuals can bring civil lawsuits against medical providers or other individuals believed to have performed an abortion or aided someone in receiving an abortion. Hovind said in an interview that he decided to support making Odessa a sanctuary city after receiving messages from residents asking him to do so if he were to be elected. What convinced me was that they, the residents, had been asking the current city council and mayor about this for years, and they never got a response. He said that while he would put forward an ordinance because community discussion needs to happen, he also believes the city should be able to prohibit abortion in the name of public safety, the same way the city does not allow candy to be thrown during parades because it could injure someone. Swiner said she became aware of Dixon's efforts to outlaw abortion in cities throughout Texas after she was invited to a meeting to be held. He held in Odessa. She said she supports the movement because of her personal experience adopting a child. I was never able to have children. And so, 25 years ago, a birth mother chose me to be the mother of her child. My daughter will be 26 in March, and her birth mom still holds a very dear place to me. She chose life over death. Madden did not respond to a request for comment from the Reporter Telegram, but told Dixon in an article for Texas Scorecard that he would support an ordinance in Odessa. I pray that this city, the city of Odessa, becomes a sanctuary city for the unborn, Madden said. It's time to stand up and protect and be the voice for the innocent lives that have been killed. Odessa could be the largest city to pass such a measure, though it would not be the largest city to consider one. The Lubbock City Council in November considered and voted down an ordinance there. It will now head to a public vote in a special election after a petition received enough votes from constituents. None of the cities that have passed ordinances currently have abortion clinics. There are only 23 clinics in the state of Texas, most clustered in the large metro areas of Dallas, Houston, and Austin. Banning abortion in Lubbock would be complicated by Planned Parenthood recently opening a location there, although the city does not have the authority to close the clinic. Residents may attempt to file civil suits and have the ordinance in place could open up the city to legal challenges. Critics of the sanctuary city movement have said that a lawsuit is the goal. They argued Dixon is hoping an appeal would eventually go before the U.S. Supreme Court and initiate the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade. Whether this ever gets to the Supreme Court or not, I think it's paramount for cities to stand up and say this is not happening in their cities. Hovind is up against current City Council member Dewey Bryant in the race for mayor after both failed to receive 50% of the vote in November. Bryant received 42% and Hovind got 39%. Swanner is running against incumbent Mayor David Turner for at-large city council member. Turner was not eligible to run for mayor, and again, because he already has served two terms. Matta is also up against an incumbent, District 1 Representative Michael Shelton. Dixon acknowledged the city council is unlikely to consider making Odessa a sanctuary city if the incumbents win on Tuesday, because the council has previously opted not to add the item to meeting agendas. It may hinge on the runoff election on December 15th, he said. The IDEA intervention. Travis Turnaround proves what's possible. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. At IDEA Travis Elementary, students and staff are proving what's possible. Proving what's possible has become more than a motto or statement on a t-shirt. It has become a reality of what was, before the start of the school year, one of the worst performing campuses in the state. That was before IDEA Public Schools came into the partnership with Midland ISD with new leadership, nearly 100% turnover in staff, and a changed mindset. Student achievement is expected and celebrated, as is good behavior. And leadership and staff do not just talk the talk, they walk the walk. And 4 months into the inaugural year, IDEA Travis officials are reporting 8 months worth of reading progress and 1 year of math progress for students in third through sixth grades. In pre-K through second grade, 2% were reading on grade level. That number is now 28%. It's expectations, said Bethany Salas, executive director of IDEA Public Schools Permian Basin. It's adults that sincerely love them and believe they can reach those high expectations. And it's leadership that systemizes that in a way that can happen school-wide. Children believe in themselves if the adults around them believe in them. These words were written by IDEA Travis founding principal Haley McCarthy in a Reporter Telegram op-ed in October. McCarthy came to Midland from IDEA South Flores in San Antonio region, where the demographics were similar to Travis, but where the Texas Education Agency rated her former campus as an A campus in 2019. We, as the adults in this community, need to change the way that we speak, McCarthy wrote. We need to talk about children in any part of town the way that we would talk about our own children, that they can and they will achieve. The success of the children in Midland is the responsibility of the adults in Midland. When we get it right, they will thrive. 4 months has shown that Travis students, or scholars as they are known on campus, post the highest growth rate across the IDEA network, and retention of students is 97%. IDEA's retention of new students is the second highest inside the IDEA network. Salas and McCarthy are proud to be making gains with a student body that is mostly returnees. They estimated that about 500 of the 760 in the student body attended Travis Elementary last year. Those kids, they said, came into school two grade levels below where they should be. But officials reported not only gains in academic performance, but student attendance. The 95.6 attendance percentage is 2% above last year. McCarthy said 70% started the school year on campus. That percentage is now around 85. The number one thing that drives everything is the adults, McCarthy said Friday. So if you have the right leader, they'll create an adult culture where it's like, we're focused, we're working, and we care. So the number one thing we have to get right is staff culture and student culture. If you did those, that's the foundation for achievement, right? Because kids have to feel safe, they have to be cared about, they have to know that they have to want to do this. And you know, it takes time to build that. But you can see you can do it relatively quickly. McCarthy said this week that the first thing she looks for in a teacher is coachability. I can teach anybody how to be a teacher, McCarthy said. Skill is easy. Mindset? No. Are you someone who wants to come to school every day and get a little bit better? Proving what's possible at IDEA requires teachers to spend up to an hour and 45 minutes after school going through their own classes. The training includes practicing live, getting feedback from coaches and school leadership, and teaching explicit skills. McCarthy said there are clear directions about how to teach. McCarthy also said that 90% of the teachers at the school are first-year teachers, and that most teachers came to Midland this year to be part of the IDEA Travis transformation. She said only 4 are returnees from last year. Monica Hernandez, a former MISD Central Office leader, joined the IDEA team working as an assistant principal of instruction, working mostly with first and second graders. To see that growth in just half a semester is just amazing, said Hernandez, a former executive director of accountability and student data systems with MISD. The most exciting part of the partnership is there are so many good things going on here that I feel we can really share with the entire community, and vice versa. It's going to be huge impact, the community as a whole, which is going to be great. Solis said IDEA Travis is also a training hub for future IDEA campuses in Midland, Odessa. She said IDEA UConn will open in Odessa next year, and then campuses are scheduled to open in Midland and Odessa for the 22-23 school year. By 2024, there should be 7 sites and 14 schools, evenly distributed across Midland and Odessa, Solis said. Conversations are in place to see if other future IDS schools in Midland will be MISD partnerships. Four principals in residence are training with McCarthy, who Solis calls arguably IDS' best elementary principal. They are learning that leadership means not only knowing students' names, but pouring through the data to keep track of which students are excelling and which are falling behind their respective learning paths, according to the data. It's not uncommon to see McCarthy go straight to specific students to offer a quick word of encouragement or a piece of advice during a tour of the campus Friday. Information about a student's progress is sent home with students every day for their parents to look at and sign, according to McCarthy. Solis said there is hardly any good behavior or achievement that doesn't go unrecognized. Scholars at IDEA Travis are motivated to be focused and do their very best with reading challenges and behavior recognition. Kids want to do well, and when they have the support to do well, and when they have the motivation to do well, doing well is just the fact of life for the kids. IDEA Travis is a Midland ISD school, a partnership formed with the district as an alternative to children in the southeast area of town being forced to attend another school, like what happened to the former Crockett Elementary years ago. Solis said, IDEA Travis is a choice school and part of the Apply Midland process. IDEA Travis officials reported a wait list at the beginning of the year surpassed 300. Those parents wanted something better than what is in place, and Midland ISD leaders made it happen. They brought in IDEA Public Schools to prove what's possible. After about 4 months, Midlanders are seeing what's possible. That appears to be one of the best turnaround stories in education in Midland and a good news story in 2020. Crude prices stay at 9-month high, close above $46. By Mellon McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Crude prices remained at their highest levels since March, staying above the $46 level for the week. Oil's rally stalled on the New York Mercantile Exchange, with West Texas Intermediate dipping 21 cents, or 4.4%, to close at $46.57 a barrel. Prices will still posted a gain from $46.76 at Monday's close. The posted price closed the week at $43 per barrel. Natural gas prices also posted gains for the week, rising 4 cents to $2.59 per MCF Friday, adding to Thursday's 11-cent rise and Wednesday's 4-cent rise. Those gains overcame the 17-cent drop Monday that saw prices fall to $2.40 per MCF. The oil market has been anticipating modest increases in OPEC Plus production as demand is restored and has already baked it into pricing, economist Ray Perriman told the Reporter Telegram. Unless they break from the expected pattern, these increases won't move prices significantly. Most markets, including the oil market, are now trying to sort out the future of the pandemic and when the economy will return to more normal conditions, and the recent news on vaccines has been encouraging. In discussing his company's 2021 outlook for energy during a media briefing Friday, Chris Megley, head of analytics, S&P Global Platts, said prices have risen absolutely too fast, too soon, in my mind. He attributed the rise to market sentiment, primarily because of the promise of a COVID-19 vaccine. Midgley said that despite the imminent arrival of a vaccine, lockdowns and low oil and jet fuel demand should be expected for several more months. I would be cautious even at these prices, he said. His company's outlook is for prices for Westex Intermediate to recover to just under $50 a barrel by the end of 2021. He cited uncertainties regarding robust spare capacity among members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and deployment of the COVID-19 vaccine. The government's Energy Information Administration raised its price outlook for West Texas Intermediate, expecting it to average $45.78, up from $38.96 in 2020. The agency expects high global oil inventory levels and surplus crude oil production capacity to limit upward pressure on oil prices through much of next year. EIA reported the front month futures price for WTI was for delivery at Cushing rose $8.83 a barrel from November 2 to December 2. Following the agreement earlier this month by OPEC members and their partner countries to raise production by only 500,000 barrels a day beginning in January and to assess the state of global oil markets and petroleum monthly, the EIA expects OPEC Plus to be largely compliant. The agency forecasts OPEC production to average 25.7 million barrels in the first quarter of 2021, a 1.7 million barrel a day reduction from EIA's November short-term energy outlook. Because of expectations of restrained OPEC Plus production next year, EIA is forecasting tighter markets next year, particularly in the first quarter. U.S. rig count jumps 15 for the week. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Drilling activity continued its upward trend as the nation's rig count bounces back from the record low of 244 reached in August. Oilfield service company Baker Hughes and data analytics company Enverus reported Friday that the U.S. rig count is up to 15. To 338 for the week, which is still 461 below the 799 reported last December. There were 258 rigs drilling for crude, up 12 for the week. There were 79 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 4 for the week. Texas added 6 rigs for 155 drilling within the state. The state count remains 245 below the 400 at work last year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 60. Ohio and Oklahoma each added 1 rig. Pennsylvania added 2, and Wyoming was second to Texas in gains, adding 4. No producing state reported a decline for the week. The Permian Basin saw 4 more rigs go to work during the week for a total of 168 King last year. Lee County, New Mexico, remained the most active in the Permian with 32 rigs, up 1. Eddy County, New Mexico, followed with 28 rigs, unchanged, for a fourth week. Midland County added 2 rigs, the biggest increase among Permian Basin counties, for 22 rigs working within county lines this week. Howard and Martin counties each had 14, unchanged for the week. Reeves County saw the steepest decline for the week, losing 2 rigs. According to Enverus, the U.S. rig count is up 9% over the last month, but is still down 51% year over year. Midland's gas price moves closer to statewide average. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstMP.com. The average price of gasoline in Midland didn't change week over week, but that didn't stop the average from moving closer to the average across Texas. The price in Midland stayed at $1.98 this week, according to AAA Texas. The lack of change in Midland's average means drivers here are paying the second highest average in Texas and 12 cents more than the state average, which increased by a penny compared to last week. While the price went unchanged in Midland, there were some drops across West Texas, according to the organization. The price fell 5 cents in Odessa, the highest average in the state. The price also fell 4 cents in El Paso, 4 cents in San Angelo, and a state-leading 12 cents in Abilene. Midland went from having the fourth highest average last week to the second highest average this week because of the changes in those West Texas communities. There were more cities across the state with price hikes. 14 of the 27 larger metropolitan areas that AAA Texas surveys reported price increases this week, including Amarillo and Lubbock. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Drivers in the Red River community of Sherman-Denison paid the lowest average for gases for of any large metropolitan area. AAA Texas reported in a press release that pump prices in the Lone Star State increased slightly, likely because crude oil prices that have been hovering at high levels from earlier this year at around $45 a barrel. In addition, the latest Energy Information Administration report shows a decline week to week in regional supply of gasoline. The average price in Midland was 41 cents lower year over year. The average across the state was 36 cents lower. Midland County tops West Texas counties for generosity by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Midland County ranked as the 10th most generous county in the state, according to SmartAsset.com's 2020 report. The financial advice website reported Midland County was the top-ranked West Texas county and ranked mostly behind counties in or around larger metropolitan areas. Kendall, Rockwall, and Collin counties made up the top three, and Denton and Fort Bend rounded out the top 10. The study, according to SmartAsset.com, took into account charitable contributions as a percentage of net income and the proportion of taxpayers that made a charitable contribution of any amount in any given county. Midland ranked fourth in the state when it came to money people donated as a percentage of their net income. When it came to the proportion of people who made charitable donations, Midland ranked 20th. Ector ranked 125th and 130th, respectively, for an overall ranking of 133rd. Midland County resident Thanksgiving travel among the highest in the nation, from staff reports. Midland County residents traveled as much per capita as just about any county in the nation during the Thanksgiving period. That was part of the findings from financial firm Advisor Smith, which came out with a report that showed Midland County ranked 8th in the nation for a county with 100,000 or more people during the Thanksgiving holiday week. The report showed residents took 7.2 long-distance trips per 100 residents compared to the national average of 3.3. That put Midland behind only Webb County among Texas counties in the large county rankings. Webb County ranked first with 10 long-distance trips per 100. Rounding out the top five were Coconino County, Arizona, Woodbury County, Iowa, and a pair of counties from the state of Georgia. Advisor Smith reported that to determine the U.S. counties with the most travel over Thanksgiving, it examined data published by the U.S. Department of Transportation Bureau of Transportation Statistics. This data set included anonymized and anonymized cell phone location data from multiple data sources that tracked the number of trips taken by county residents from more than 3,000 U.S. counties. This data set counted a trip of a mobile device spent more than 10 minutes in a location away from home. To find the counties with the most Thanksgiving travel, counted the average number of trips over 100 miles that were taken by residents of each county on a per capita basis. Counties with the highest number of trips per capita were determined to have the highest number of trips over the Thanksgiving holiday. We considered all travel between dates of November 20 and November 29th to be Thanksgiving travel. With the second wave of coronavirus affecting the nation, the CDC recommended people avoid unnecessary travel during Thanksgiving week to help stop the virus's spread. Obituaries and death notices. Gary Gale Wisner, 82, passed away on Monday, December 7th in Hot Springs, Arkansas. There will not be a service due to COVID, but if you wish to remember Gary, you can give to the Baylor University Foundation in his name. Harold Gene Sledge, 90, of Midland, went home to his Heavenly Father on Sunday, December 6th. The funeral service will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Monday, December 14th, at the First Baptist Church in Midland, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Gene Collar Allen March passed away peacefully in Loveland, Colorado on November 19th. For memories about Gene, please visit dignitymemorial.com/obituaries/Loveland, Colorado/Gene Allen. Patricia Patty White, age 66, passed away December 5th after a brief illness. Recitation of the Rosary will be held at 5 p.m. Wednesday, December 16th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, December 17th. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Phil W. Ebensberger of Temple was born July 4, 1937 and passed away recently. Graveside services will be held Saturday, December 19th at 2 p.m. at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Roger Spotts passed away on December 1st at the age of 42. Services will be held on Tuesday, December 15th at 2 p.m. at the First Baptist Church of Midland. All COVID-19 protocols will be followed. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Ronnie Earl Parrish passed away on December 2nd. Services will be held Saturday, December 12th at Bethel Missionary Baptist Church in Midland. Burial will be in Serenity Memorial Park under the direction of Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Ruth Ann Page of Midland passed away on December 10th. A visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, December 11th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. There will be a graveside service in Stanton at Evergreen Cemetery on Saturday, December 12th at 1 p.m. Thomas J. Stinson, 81, of Conroe, passed away on December 8th. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. on Thursday, December 17th at Eichenhorst Funeral Services with Don Kidd officiating. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, seating is limited. But a memorial service will be planned for next year when the situation is safer. Doyce Roy Rowe, D.R., of Midland, passed away on December 4th. A memorial service will be held in Midland at the Kentucky Baptist Church on Saturday, December 12th. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the St. Jude's and Kentucky Baptist Church to start a recovery ministry.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, December 12th, 2020. Section A. Deputy released from hospital. Sheriff's Office continues search for second suspect by Royal McGregor. The Ector County Sheriff's Office deputy who was shot Thursday evening has been released from Medical Center Hospital. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths confirmed the deputy was released from the hospital Friday and is resting at home. One of the suspects who were involved in the officer-involved shooting was shot and killed, while Griffiths said on Friday afternoon that the second suspect is still at large. Griffiths said that the second suspect isn't deemed dangerous, as the driver was the one who shot at deputies. The deputy's release from the hospital was concurrent with the sheriff's prognostication when he confidently said Thursday evening, after he traveled to the hospital, that the deputy was in stable condition and is expected to make a full recovery. Griffiths explained Friday morning over the phone that the identity of the deputy won't be released at this time due to the ongoing investigation. Griffiths also declined to identify the suspect who was shot and killed in the officer-involved shooting. The suspect reportedly fired at deputies while fleeing on foot following a high-speed chase. He said the suspect was dead on arrival when they reached the hospital. The officer-involved shooting happened around 7:40 p.m. in the area of Hickory Avenue and Ada Street. Two suspects reportedly went on a high-speed chase, and it ended in the 1300 block of Wilson Street. The suspects fled on foot. Griffiths declined to identify either suspect. Deputies pursued the suspects on foot, Griffiths said during a TV interview with CBS 7 Thursday night. During the pursuit, a suspect fired at deputies, struck one of the deputies, and deputies returned fire. Midland Festival Ballet reimagines The Nutcracker. Annual performance to be on big screen from Basin PBS by Michael Bauer. For the past 27 years, the Midland Festival Ballet has entertained hundreds of people with its annual production of The Nutcracker during Christmas time. This year, however, because of COVID-19, things will be a little bit different. This year's performance will be brought to the big screen with a special known as The Nutcracker Reimagined, produced locally by Film Hunter Media and sponsored by DBAT, Permian Basin, and the Arts Council of Midland. The Nutcracker Reimagined is a film retelling of the original story of Clara and the Nutcracker. In the past, the performance has been done on the stage at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. However, because of the pandemic, Executive Director Rachel Kerr-Ritter said that this year's performance was not going to be the same. Once we realized the uncertainty with COVID was going to make it impossible to do a normal show, we made the decision to do a different show, she said. Fortunately, I work with some creative people who had the idea to take our Nutcracker and make it into a film. We were able to do that with a smaller cast and have some pods that they worked in. We recorded it group by group in October. There will be a few different options this month to see the show. The first will be Under the Stars at the Big Sky Drive-In at 7:30 p.m. December 18th, where the tickets are $10, but free for children ages 5 and under. The second option is to stream the video online anytime from December 20th through the 31st, with streaming tickets $30. The video will also be available to be watched on Basin PBS December 23rd at 8:30 p.m. This is our way of being able to do something for the community and try something new, Ritter said. We've never really done a live stream, so we're excited about it. I'm excited for us to work with Basin PBS this year. Not only is this year's production going to be different, but the rehearsal schedule was also shorter. Normally, our dancers start rehearsing in September, Ritter said. The little ones come once a week, and the older ones come maybe four times a week. We kind of continued that, just with smaller groupings, and our kids were separated. It was different from normal, because usually we all come together for rehearsal, and that didn't happen. I worked with Film Hunter Media, who thought about how to film this, but it still tells a story, and I hope brings something new to the community. Ritter says that this year, they have 50 dancers total. Normally, they have about 130, and that includes local dancers and guest artists from across the country. The entire show was filmed during two weekends in October. Currently, Ritter says they are in the final stage of editing the video. I know on the creative side, they were able to edit the ballet, Ritter said. It's not as long as what you would see at the Wagner Knoll. According to Ritter, the steps were shortened and there wasn't as much choreography for the dancers, which helped. She says for their older dancers, it was the same amount of choreography to learn. How we dealt with that is we started working with them earlier than we'd normally would, Ritter said. We started our classes in August and started rehearsing with them. It was still a shortened schedule, but they stepped up to the plate and made it happen. Just in terms of us having to think through this, we knew in July that it wasn't going to work with us doing it in person. Helping out with a different choreography was artistic director Susan Clark. Susan thought through the different choreography and how to make this possible and how to put our dancers at their best, despite the fact that it's so different. And she deserves all the credit for making this work, Ritter said. For Clark, making it all come together was almost easier said than done, but nevertheless, she is proud with how the dancers performed, considering the challenges. It was stressful, but it was probably more difficult for the younger ones, Clark said. Usually it's like we can go over what we worked on the previous week, but this year we had to push through it. I think for the older ones, most of them are used to working with me, and getting back into shape was the big part. Not just learning the moves, but also getting everyone back into shape after the layover from spring was cumbersome at times. The Zoom classes are good, but you can't keep up stamina by doing classes at home, Clark said. I think they enjoyed it. It was good. There were parts that I think the kids did a great job in, and I can't wait. I think they'll be happy when they see it. While the ballet looks forward to returning to the stage for live presentations of the Nutcracker in future years, Ritter is still happy with this year's production. I'm proud of all the hard work that the dancers put in. It was a disappointment for some of them since they have been doing it their whole lives, and this was going to be their last one before graduating from high school, Ritter said. Even the younger ones put in a lot of work and had a great attitude about it, even though they weren't going to be performing on the Wagner Knoll stage. On the staff side, our staff adapted quickly when all of this happened. We were able to do this because of the behind-the-scenes work. I couldn't be happier that we're still able to do a show, despite the odds. Local news roundup. Window Nights Downtown. Downtown Odessa presents Merry and Bright Window Nights Downtown, a Winterfest event. Instead of decorating a float, Downtown Odessa is inviting community organizations, businesses, schools, and more to decorate a storefront for the community to view from Monday through January 3rd, 2021. All decorated storefronts will be judged for a chance to win cash prizes. For more details or to register, visit www.downtownodessatx.com/799/Mary-and-Bright. Kids Art Contest. The Take Care of Texas Kids Art Contest runs from January 4th through March 5th, 2021. K through 5 students in Texas are invited to enter their artwork. 6 students and 1 lucky teacher will win a tablet or laptop. To sign up or for more details, visit takecareoftexas.org/kids/k-5-art-contest. Hospitals Plan Vaccine Distribution by Ruth Campbell. Once emergency use authorization is granted by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and shots against COVID-19 are delivered, local hospitals will begin administering them to frontline workers. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Rohit Saravanan said, as soon as they get the vaccine, whether it is from Pfizer or Moderna, the hospital will start administering it. Saravanan said he thinks they will get it the week of December 21st and will start administering it the day after. Healthcare workers. It means the people who are in the front lines working in hospitals, police department, EMS, fire. Those are the people who are in the front line. So healthcare workers within the hospital system and frontline workers in the community are the first set of people to receive it. A news release said ORMC is prepared to offer and administer the vaccine to its healthcare personnel, inclusive of all Steward healthcare personnel, frontline healthcare workers, and affiliated community medical staff members as soon as the vaccine becomes available at its facilities. The Pfizer vaccine is 2 doses 3 weeks apart, and the Moderna vaccine is 2 doses 4 weeks apart. Saravanan said. He noted that nothing magical will happen on that first day. It takes time, he said. Remember, the vaccine is in 2 doses, so you're going to split it by 3 weeks or 4 weeks, depending on the type of vaccine you get. And for it to actually show that it's decreasing hospitalization or for it to show that it's decreasing the positivity rate in our community will take some time, so we don't anticipate that something drastic will change when the vaccine gets here. We know the result of that will lag behind by maybe a month, maybe even 2 months, so we are still in this, and we will continue to be in it probably through the end of December, end of January, before we start to see an effect from the vaccine, Saravanan added. The type of vaccine the hospital gets does matter, and they don't know for certain which one it will be. We're not on the first week allocation, Saravanan said. We'll probably be on the second week allocation. The first week allocation is definitely going to be the Pfizer vaccine. That's what Midland Memorial is going to get. The second week allocation will be the Pfizer vaccine, or it could be the Moderna vaccine, if that Moderna vaccine goes through the emergency use authorization by the FDA by then. So we don't know which one we'll get, but it does make a difference between the because of the cold storage differences. The Pfizer requires ultra cold storage. It can only last in the fridge for 5 days. It can only last at room temperature for a few hours. The Moderna vaccine, it can be in a regular household freezer, and it can last in the fridge for 30 days. It can last in room temperature for 12 hours, so it does make a difference which one we get, because logistically that will change our plans. But I don't think we'll know until the allocation is announced. We hope the allocation will be announced early next week for the following week, Saravanan said. He added that he's excited that a vaccine is on the way. because we know that once we start doing it, there is most definitely a light at the end of the tunnel. Once we start doing it, we know that the surge is going to end. We know that the positivity rate will be going down. We just don't know in what length of time, and we don't know exactly how much yet. That remains to be studied because that's the first rollout of the vaccine. So, yes, overall, I'm very excited that we'll have a vaccine, but we have to see how it's actually going to affect this disease process that's in our community, Saravanan said. Even with the vaccine, he recommended that people still take precautions to prevent the spread of COVID-19 because the effect of the vaccine could still take a month or two to show. So yes, we have to continue all our precautions. In fact, with the people who receive the vaccine, we don't know if receiving the vaccine will protect others, Saravanan said. We only know that the vaccine will help you protect yourself by producing an antibody response. We don't know if that will help you not be infectious to other people. So even if you've gotten the vaccine, the recommendation will still be to wear the mask, to do the social distancing, to wash your hands, and not congregate in groups. Kristen Timmons, chief nursing officer at Medical Center Hospital, said Friday that MCH is preparing to receive vaccinations from the Department of State Health Services the week of December 21st. We have been planning to roll out to our employees for several weeks now and are prepared to distribute to all those who serve inpatient-facing roles within 72 hours of receipt, Timmons said in a text message. Local news roundup. MCH reports four more COVID-19 related deaths. Medical Center Health System reported its 156th, 157th, 158th, and 159th COVID-related deaths, a Friday press release detailed. The first patient, a 60-year-old man, died Thursday afternoon. He was a resident of Ector County and was admitted to MCH December 9th. The second patient, a 60-year-old woman, died Thursday evening. She was a resident of Ector County and was admitted to MCH on November 9th. The third patient, an 86-year-old man, died early Friday morning. He was a resident of Odessa. The fourth patient, a 93-year-old man, died early Friday morning. He was a resident of Midland County and was admitted to MCH November 27th. All patients had pre-existing conditions and all families have been notified. Police searching for man involved in burglaries. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man involved in burglarizing multiple vehicles on the east side of Odessa. The reported burglaries happened around 3:17 a.m. December 9th in the 6200 block of Linwood Drive, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that an unknown man burglarized multiple vehicles and left the scene in a dark-colored Dodge Challenger. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/YXC75ZHT. Anyone with information about the burglaries is asked to contact Detective S. Alafchian at 432-331-2045. That's Alafchian. Or contact Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-00-213-84. ORMC speaks to stringent hospital visitation policies. The COVID-19 pandemic has required hospitals around the world to make difficult decisions about how to balance minimizing disease transmission with continuing to provide compassionate and high-quality patient care. Of these many dilemmas, developing flexible visitor policies is particularly difficult. Currently, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and many state health departments encourage limiting visitation in general, but recognize the need for exceptions in special circumstances, such as in maternity, pediatrics, patients with disabilities, end-of-life settings, and other unique reasons on a case-by-case basis. From an infection control perspective, there are certainly valid reasons to limit visitation. Even with screenings, any movement into and out of a hospital poses a risk of transmitting disease. Infected but asymptomatic persons are known to transmit the disease. Additionally, hospitals still treat non-COVID-19 patients who are most susceptible to severe illness should they develop COVID-19 infection. Limitations in testing capacity, personal protective equipment, PPE, and staffing made it challenging to ensure safe visitation. In many cases, it was almost impossible to mitigate the transmission risk that visitors posed. Because many hospitals did not have the capacity to test all symptomatic patients, they could not reliably limit visits to COVID-19 positive patients. Additionally, without enough PPE for healthcare workers, hospitals could not afford for visitors to use additional PPE. On the other hand, we should not forget that visitation has significant benefits for both patients' psychological well-being and their overall outcomes. Putting aside the emotional support that the physical presence of loved ones can offer, a large body of research indicates that allowing visitors can also meaningfully improve other important patient outcomes. Specifically, the presence of visitors is associated with less fear, reduced delirium, and even faster recovery. In many cases, family members can also help improve hospital safety surveillance and catch medical errors. We share these concerns and try to balance them with wanting to minimize disease transmission. Even with PPE and screenings, there is still a chance that visitors unknowingly spread COVID-19 to others in the hospital. This is the reason for our strict policy on limiting visitation. We have, however, made exceptions for special circumstances as stated above. We have taken steps to allow visitors for such patients while minimizing the likelihood of COVID-19 disease transmission from visitors. Arriving visitors are screened and required to wear PPE. While these measures may not eliminate the risk of COVID-19 transmission from visitors, they will likely reduce it significantly when implemented properly and make possible a more humane experience for all. Empty stocking, not full. With only 6 days to go in the 26th year of the Empty Stocking Fund, our goal of $100,000 won't be met without your help. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund can help families like that of Hannah, not her real name, a struggling grandmother with custody of her 5 and 8-year-old grandchildren. She's on a fixed income and needs help. Donations may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800, ZIP 79761, or call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. Donate online at tinyurl.com/VH5FJDZ. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2 million.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.